You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin recorded roughly 2,500 new COVID-19 cases today, making it the second highest daily count on record. The highest count recorded was just last Friday. The increase comes at a time when the United States has reached a grim milestone. As of yesterday, there have been nearly 203,000 deaths nationwide since the start of the pandemic. According to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, 1,265 people have died here in the state as a result of COVID-19. Our next guest joins us to break down this week's COVID statistics and what they could mean for hospitals statewide. Amanda Simonek is an associate professor of epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She's also a contributor to the Dear Pandemic website and social media pages. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me back on the program.
Well, talk, please, about these numbers in Wisconsin. We have not been hit by this in terms of positive tests yet in this pandemic, right?
Yes, unfortunately, we are not in a good place going into the fall right now. We have a surge in cases in Wisconsin. As you mentioned, 2,500 new cases today. The seven-day average that was reported yesterday was nearly 2,000 cases a day. And we've seen a surge in cases among 18 to 24-year-olds over the past month or two.
Yeah, talk about that age group. When I look at the chart, everybody is going up, it looks like, but that age group in particular is really going up.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a steady increase across ages. I think, with the reopening and with things being people interacting more over the summer months. But of course, we've had the resumption of college life, right? And so we are seeing a surge in cases among that age group, unfortunately.
But this isn't just a college student story. What are we seeing when we remove that 18 to 24 demographic from the picture?
Yeah, I mean, we are still seeing an increase in cases across the board. And unfortunately, we right now have the most people hospitalized, I think, that we've had since April. And so, what we know is that there's a lag. There's a lag between when people become cases, when they transmit the infection to other people who may be more vulnerable or suffer from complications, become hospitalized, and then we might be looking at a surge in deaths, in the coming weeks. So, it's unfortunate that this is the place we're in the fall, and I think it just calls on people to sort of take a pause and rein in and think about where they can close up their social circles, to emphasize using masks, to keep social distancing when you are interacting with others. As the temperatures are getting cooler and we're going to be inclined to move our activities indoors, it's going to become even more important to embrace those precautions to prevent transmission of infection.
And there's the thing. I think 6 months in, a lot of people are feeling kind of a fatigue, wanting to do stuff to get back to normal. I know in my own family, we've talked about, can we do this thing that we wouldn't have done? It's a little higher risk. It seems like this is exactly, in Wisconsin, not the time to be making those changes, right?
Well, I think we have to, we have to keep going with what we know works to break those chains of transmission, right? So if you, can keep your social circle small and consistent, we can try to stay outdoors as long as possible. So if that means getting some new winter gear or getting a space heater for your porch or whatever it is, I think we should try to keep those interactions outdoors, keep wearing masks, and do the things that we know work that can help us contain this, infection in the community.
When people are weighing risks, I know people have a lot of very specific questions that they ask you on the Dear Pandemic website, but it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong with anything I say, all things considered, outdoor safer than indoor, less crowded, safer than more crowded, masked safer than unmasked, better ventilated, safer than unventilated. Those are some rules that we can pretty much take to the bank at this point. Is that right?
Yeah. So back in June, the group that I work with, Dear Pandemic, is a group of 10 PhD-trained female scientists. We have a social media-based science communication campaign. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are fielding questions from followers, anything pandemic-related. And we came up with a graphic, SMART, this acronym, space, mask, air, restrict, time. And, it still holds up. These are the same guidelines and things that we are telling people they should apply, now.
What are some of the most common questions you're getting lately at Dear Pandemic?
Well, a very hot topic right now is Halloween. I think of the 10 of us, between all of us, we have 20 kids between ages 2 and 21. So, we all are thinking, what are we going to do for this holiday as well? And I think, most local health and the state health department are recommending we don't do traditional trick-or-treating, and we think about ways to modify that activity to be safe, right? So we are fielding questions about this and some of the, things that we want to avoid with Halloween. If you imagine kids from different households gathering around a bowl of candy, reaching in, shouting, trick or treat within short range of the people handing the candy out, that's sort of what we want to figure out how to modify, right? So some of the suggestions that we have gave to followers is if you could pre-prepare candy, like little treat bags, and put them out onto a table and be on your porch, then kids can walk by, grab a bag, and it doesn't involve close contact. I have seen really creative ideas about, using a PVC pipe or some other way to create like a delivery tube, to deliver candy at a distance to people who are trick-or-treating. Most Halloween costumes do have masks, but we still would recommend that you wear a cloth mask. So integrating that into your child's costume is a great solution. In general, we want to, avoid crowds, not hang out indoors, having a costume party, and, try to keep, if you do go out and you are trick-or-treating, to keep with the same people who you already have contact with is the best way, avoiding crowds and sort of thinking, how can I enjoy this holiday, but, not have as close a contact with individuals as we normally would.
Talking to Amanda Simonek, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at UW-Milwaukee's School of Public Health, talking about the latest pandemic news as case numbers, positive tests go up in Wisconsin. Amanda, there's been a lot of talk, including from some political figures on this show, saying, hey, herd immunity is the answer here. If enough of us have a resistance, this will stop the disease. One way to get there is a vaccine, which we don't have yet. So where are we? How close would we be to getting, natural herd immunity because enough people have had this thing?
Well, we do not want to achieve herd immunity through natural infection. That would be catastrophic. We would be looking at millions more deaths in the U.S. if we were to let that happen. And it wouldn't be, something that would happen overnight either. The estimates are that we would need to achieve around 60 to 70% of the population to be infected with COVID-19. We're still learning a lot, though, about how long immunity lasts. It may be that we, if you have infection, we, like other coronaviruses, immunity lasts around 1 to 2 years. So we're not looking at permanent immunity, probably, from natural infection. Whereas with a vaccine, we might be able to achieve longer term immunity. And so I think this idea that we should just let this infection sort of run its course through the population is a really dangerous idea. And it's not what public health professionals are recommending in any way.
And Amanda, I think there's a lot of focus, understandably, on the number of deaths because of coronavirus. What are we learning so far about the impact this could have on people longer term, even if they survive the disease?
Yeah, we are still learning, but there's a whole class of people who get COVID-19 that are calling long haulers or long COVID. People who, their symptoms don't seem to go away right away. They sort of experience the adverse effects of COVID-19 for months. There's also damage to different organs and tissues of the body in people who get COVID-19 that we don't know the long-term prognosis of that damage. So we have a lot to learn, even though it feels like we've been in this pandemic for a century now, and it feels, a long time to be dealing with it. In the grand scheme of things, we are still learning about this infection, and it'll take a while to really understand the long-term implications of this infection for those that don't, unfortunately pass away, but still experience a lot of morbidity.
Let's take a minute or two to talk about our mental and emotional well-being, because this is a scary thing, a dangerous thing. It's cut us off from a lot of our regular lines of support. And I know depression rates are higher, and people are maybe drinking more or doing other things that are not you know, the greatest coping mechanisms. What would you tell people about maintaining not just their physical health, but the other stuff too?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really big issue, right? So staying home and being socially isolated isn't ideal for mental health. You know, I think staying in contact with people to the extent you can, you know, either virtually, if family are far away, or, you know, having a social network of people that is consistent and that you sort of, you know, can get outdoors with and, you know, socialize with is great. Getting outside to get physical activity is also really important, you know, while we can. And so I think if you are experiencing, you know, symptoms of depression or anxiety, or you're struggling with substance abuse, you know, that it can be challenging. And we would encourage people to reach out to resources, you know, in their community to help cope with, you know, some of the stressors that are entail having to sort of be socially isolated.
One last question, Amanda. I've seen some reports that people are skipping their childhood vaccinations or immunizations because they don't want to get exposed to COVID. And then there's the question of, are people going to go out and get their flu vaccines this year? What would you say to people weighing those options?
I would say getting the flu vaccine is probably one of the most important things that you can do right now in this stage of the pandemic. The symptoms of flu and COVID are highly overlapping. And so the less people we have that end up getting the flu and having to sort of go to the doctor and probably will need a COVID test just to rule COVID out, the better. And we also know that a fair number of people who get seasonal influenza virus do end up hospitalized. So, you know, what we want to avoid is this, what's being called a potential twindemic of circulating influenza as well as COVID-19. And luckily, many of the precautions that we take around social distancing, hand washing, and mask use are going to have an effect on breaking the chains of transmission of influenza as well. But yes, and so in terms of getting childhood vaccines, please go contact your doctor. Doctor's offices are taking a lot of precautions. Wearing a mask at the doctor's office and going is a is a safe thing you can do, and they are taking the right steps to protect people from COVID-19 in that setting. And please do go get your childhood vaccinations.
Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Amanda Simonek is an associate professor of epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee. She joined us today to talk about the growing rates and the number of COVID-19 cases in Wisconsin. You can find more at the Dear Pandemic website, Facebook page, Instagram, many social media. You can check out her work and that of her colleagues at Dear Pandemic.